Welcome to the Recovery Lab podcast. We're glad you were able to join us. Recovery Lab hopes to destigmatize addiction and normalize recovery.
Our platform provides an avenue to share the many stories of those that have recovered from addiction, providing for the listener the most basic antidote to addiction.
Hope. All right, everybody, we're back. This is episode number 80 of the Recovery Lab podcast series. I'm Drew Hassan.
I'm Daniel Anderson.
We are the Recovery Lab. We are rejoined. He revisits the Recovery Lab, Zed Thompson. Glad to have you, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, both of y'all.
I know it's kind of hard to take it all in. It's a lot going on in here.
It's not oppressive, but it's
over. It's stimulating.
It is definitely stimulating.
It presents.
It presents.
It presents. It presents. But it's super nice. I'm really happy that y'all were able to do everything that you've done.
This is all his doing.
Oh, I didn't do anything in here. I don't know. Drew helped me with everything in here.
Drew didn't do anything.
No. It's So I just want to take a second and before you instructed us to take the breath or take the minute breath, it's pretty remarkable what a minute of paying attention to the breath does to the system. That will always amaze me.
Yeah, it's
never a bad idea.
No,
I learned that from somebody that's sitting in here. I do believe.
Well, I mean, I was sitting in my head when we were talking earlier. I was like, oh my gosh, what am I supposed to?
Yeah, no, I kind of felt that a little bit.
And so I took my own advice there, and you know, the way out of the head is into the body. And the way into the body is through the breath, and it works every time, doesn't it?
Every time. Yeah, I did notice there was a little bit of, not nervousness, but like, I mean, you don't do a whole lot of podcasts, so like the fact that you're here, like we're super, super grateful to you for that. Yeah. But this can be overwhelming. There's, you know, we've got a plethora of lights. We have a lot of equipment and a lot of...
There are lots of cords.
Lots going on in the studio, and it can be a lot. When I would struggle and in sessions and things, that was one thing that we kind of did was focus on that breathing. And you're absolutely right. It absolutely changes. It can change everything. And I felt it as well. Like I felt your energy and I was feeding off of that. And I was like, okay, well, let's pause for just a second and let's get centered and let's get grounded because, me
I presented.
Yeah. Yeah. Me in that state, I'm not a whole lot of help to anyone. So it's important to get grounded. So we're grateful that you're here today. And I see you personally as a bit of a celebrity. I do. Because for me, people that are making massive moves and helping people day in and day out and sacrificing of their time to listen to people that are struggling with problems, to me, that's what makes a celebrity. That is something that I hold in high regard. And that is something that excites me to see is someone who has made a decision in their life. They've done the work necessary in order to be okay with who they are as a person. Mm. And now they are wanting to help other people and make a career around that to be able to help other people. So for me, the fact that you're here is more than just a guest. It's you're someone who I respect quite possibly more than anyone else in this city.
Gosh.
And
heavy burden this morning.
And so I want, I don't want to waste a single second. I feel like blabbering my mouth is doing just that. So Drew, let's hop into that. What we were talking about just a second. Why don't you phrase that how you phrased it? And let's jump into that, because I don't want to waste a second.
So we had envisioned that today's episode would be about relationships. And, you know, there are a couple avenues that I guess you, a couple facets of relationships and recovery. Mm. There's, I'm in recovery and I'm in a relationship. And how do I best go about being the best partner I can be? And then there's the other side, which we've all had affect us in some way, and that's how common it is for people in recovery to be so horrible in relationships. Mm-hmm. I can look back on my own past, and I mean, there are a couple people that, I mean, I took hostage and was just as awful too as I could be.
Me too.
And I did not have the presence of mind or wherewithal at the time to realize just how toxic of a boyfriend I was being.
Yeah. I've been in the same relationship since the end of 2000. So I've been with the same person for almost
24 years.
And that's interesting. That's really interesting. I got sober 3 or 4 years into our marriage. And, I'm not shocked or overly surprised that we are still together, but it took a lot of work. There's a Neil Young song, Lot of Love. Mm-hmm. You ever heard that song?
I can't pull it down out of my mental Spotify.
Yeah. It's going to take a lot of love.
A lot of forgiveness.
To get us through the night. Yeah. So what I'm remembering now took a lot of love. It took a lot of work. It took a lot of stuff.
Would you say communication was a cornerstone of the success that you two have had in your relationship?
I would say that, and I've gotten in touch with this the last few years, and I'm going to phrase it in a real weird way, but just the spirituality of shutting your mouth.
Right.
So part of communication is knowing when to shut up, right? Like, and that's where, I think that's where a lot of us get burned, is we don't know when to be quiet.
Oh, I so suffer from. Don't know when I'm going to make my point.
Yeah, I'm going to follow you around the house.
I'm going to prove to you that I am right.
Yep.
And you are wrong.
Yeah. So a lot of my learning how to communicate was learning how to shut up. So I remember well, like, okay, this is super uncomfortable because I want to defend myself. I want to get the last word in. I want to make one more desperate attempt to prove that I was right and you were wrong.
So how do you find the balance between shutting up and shutting down?
Meditation. The daily practice. For me, the daily practice of meditation. That's the cornerstone. That is the thing that just can't go anywhere for me, because that's where it all comes back to. All the instructions and all the teachings are in that time that I sit completely still as I can possibly sit.
That is so hard for me.
That is so hard.
It's
for any,
so hard.
It's hard for human being. It's hard for anybody with a neocortex. Because we think and we imagine and we, oh, I got to do this. I got to do this. Oh, my God, I remember that. Holy shit, this is going to happen. I mean, this is what we do. We think and think and think. So you want to talk about a relationship what relationship do I have with my thoughts? Right?
Right.
And that's a relationship right there. And I don't want to take over or anything.
No, that's why you're here. Yeah. Okay.
but this, you know, communicating, learning how to shut up, that has so much to do with what I think about, which I don't always have a lot of control over what I think about, but when I'm really practiced, I can always choose what to do with a thought. I can say, all right, I'm gonna stop thinking about that. And I'm gonna think about a camera or a light or some keys. And meditation is sit still. Let my human brain do what a human brain does, which a human brain thinks. So I'm going to sit down in the first few minutes or just let my human brain do what a human brain does, which is think. And so that energy, I just let it. Do your thing. I sit down, do your thing. Sometimes 3 minutes, sometimes 8 minutes, but invariably everything slows down. And I just let it do its thing. It'll think, gotta do this, doop, 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 doop. Last week, next month, 1982. And then it just slows down. And that's when I can really remember. Like, okay, here we go. What do I need to make right today? Did I, you know, a 10th step type thing. So I can really sit with what needs to be breathed into and then just see what happens to it. See if it changes. See if it's really not that big of a deal. To see if it came from a defensive place or to see if it really is something, hey, I need to make that right. So communication has a lot to do with shutting up and sitting with what's important. Do I want to die on that hill, or does that it need to be let go of? So there's, and well, meditation teaches me how to demystify a lot of things. Like when I first got sober, and I would be in the rooms. I didn't say anything for a long time, but I would hear people instruct one another or observe to one another that you got to let that go. You got to accept that. You know, I didn't know what any of that meant. Mm-hmm. I don't know what any of that stuff meant. That was a word. And eventually I would say to myself, somebody's going to have to show me how to do that because that's just a word. That's just a word. And if that word gets involved with my thoughts at that time, That doesn't mean anything. So how do I turn, what relationship do I have with letting go? What relationship do I have with acceptance? What relationship do I have with demystifying these words and platitudes and things we say to each other? What relationship do I have with putting that into some kind of physical practice? A physical experience.
And I think that's exactly what it is. It is a practice because it's virtually
100%.
It might as well be hieroglyphics. This idea that I can I can accept something,
yeah.
Radical acceptance. And it really is something that must be done over and over, over and over.
Yeah.
And it's even hard to articulate what it means to find something and accept it. Because generally, you don't have to accept things that are profitable, pleasurable, permissive in your scheme of morals. It's the things that you object to,
exactly,
that you have to accept. And it's foreign. It is a foreign concept. Is that what your meditation practice is, you think, at large, is trying to renew in your mind those very basic things that we need to do to stay sober, healthy, happy?
Yeah.
What's my next right step?
Yeah.
Where do I need to make amends? Where have I fallen short?
Absolutely. And I learned that this system, this nervous system, this psyche, all this stuff, and this may not be the same for everybody, but this, and I'm pointing to myself, has to have stillness. I have to be still. So that's the objective for me. Be still. If I can be still, the stuff that's supposed to sort itself out will sort itself out. And
what are meditation? What have you tried and what do you do now? And what I'm asking you is, are you a first thing in the morning Tibetan singing bowl man, or are you, okay, I'm stressed, I need to turn the white noise machine on and just kind of breathe for a minute? What have you tried? What works well for you? What have you discarded?
Do you mean to tell you exactly what I do?
Yes.
Okay. So each morning, except for Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I'll get into that in just a second.
Okay.
Each morning, I have a 20 minutes. I have a timer on my phone, that Insight timer. I set it for, there's a bell that goes off 16 minutes into the meditation. So there's the opening bell, and then I've got a little bitty singing bowl, and I invite that bell three times. And then I sit completely still until the bell at 4 minutes goes off. And that's when I do the prayer. Same prayer every day.
What is that prayer?
I breathe in and I recite the Serenity Prayer, but one line of the Serenity Prayer with each out breath. So it's breathe in, God. And I try to do the original, you asked for it, the original pronunciation of the name of God was the sound of the breath. The original spelling and pronunciation of Yahweh was, so I thought, why not invoke the name of God through the breath? So I would say God, or I'll do the, and then grant me the serenity. And then I go through the Serenity Prayer, breathe in, one line. And then I get, at the end of the Serenity Prayer, I took three or four lines from the extended version of the Serenity Prayer. So after the, God grant me the serenity, accept the things that cannot change, courage, change things that can, win wisdom, know the difference. Just for today. Accepting hardship as the pathway to peace. And then I improvised here. So I may remember that grateful people are happy and peace is a way of being alive. Every day.
Is this a... Obviously, there's a big difference between motivation and discipline. Is this something that is a... This is discipline. You are not motivated to do this every single day.
Oh, hell no.
With the exception of Tuesday and Thursday.
Well, Tuesday and Thursday, you let me tell you what that is real quick, and then I'm going to the next thing. That is sauna meditation. I refer to it as sweat lodge meditation.
Okay.
So I get in the sauna, and I sit for 25 minutes in the sauna, and that's usually right after I've gone running or I've done an exercise regimen. I'll sit in the sauna for 25 minutes, and you want to talk about trying to sit still in the 170-degree sauna, 16, 17, 18 minutes in is the hardest thing in the whole wide world for me to do. And so I'm really having to, like, wow, because I'm present. Trust me, I'm not thinking about much. And the only thing I'm thinking about is, I cannot wait for this 25-minute mark to get here. And so I try to work with that. I tell myself that I'm building some kind of ego strength there. I tell myself I'm doing something that I really, really, really don't want to do right now. I really want to get out of this thing because it is hot. I'm sweating like crazy. And I feel like sometimes like a claustrophobic anxiety. I'm like, no, keep going. 25 minutes. There's a little chair outside the sauna. I sit in it for 5 minutes. And I close my eyes, and it's just back to the breath, back to the breath. And it's interesting because I can feel my body coming back. Like it perfectly does what it's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. If you let your body do what it's supposed to do, it'll perfectly do it. So it's doing its thing. I'm closing my eyes, and then 5 minutes. So at 30 minutes, I get back in the sauna for 10 minutes. Yeah. Just squeeze the lemon. And then I go do the cold water stuff after that. But that's the meditation on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And the other ones are sit completely still for that 16 minutes. And then when there's 4 minutes left, I slowly recite that prayer.
Just for our listeners, in case you're wondering, I'm sitting over here thinking, if I can do one of these things, if I can accomplish one, I will feel accomplished.
Well, look, man, I'm better now, but the heart of my pathology, I was not disciplined. I was not disciplined. So that's what so much of this is about for me.
Yeah, I'm the exact same way. And you know, the cold plunge I have since I started mm-hmm. with you, I just celebrated my 365th straight day.
I think I saw that.
Yeah. Awesome. What was that, last week? And yeah, I was like, you know what? Things are going well right now in my life. Why stop now? So I'm going for 2 years.
There you go.
But the number one thing that, and the reason that I continue to do that, and again, that all started at your office with that first cold plunge that I ever did. The reason I do that is for the discipline that it builds, because I was talking about this with someone just the other day, and I was able to identify two times that I, in that year, that I enjoyed the cold plunge.
I can't think of one.
Two times I was able to like close my eyes and meditate and just every other day. It was, oh my God, I don't want to do this. I hate this, but I'm going to force myself to do that. And I honestly struggled a tremendous amount with discipline prior to you kind of opening up my world to, it was Gracie and I did the sweat lodge the day before, which was a Saturday at Denise's place. And then she was like, why don't you come do the cold plunge? And I was like, okay. I had seen you, you know, having clients come and do it for a long time, and I was just ready. And that was, I mean, it has fundamentally changed my life. So to hear you talk about how the meditation, which is something that I struggle with a great deal, sitting still, is a discipline and not a motivation thing for you, is very encouraging to me.
Yeah. And and this is not an original theory, but my personal theory behind that is I can't just say I'm motivated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's created and maintained by doing things that you want to do and things that you don't want to do.
Right.
It's especially the things that you don't want to do.
Yeah, it's exactly like gratitude. Gratitude, like when I first came in the program, like people like, you know, the thought of having a gratitude meeting was just
laborious.
It made my soul melt in a horrible, horrible way. But what I've come to realize through listening and shutting up and listening is, gratitude, just like anything else that's difficult but worthwhile, is a practice, and it takes time, and it takes, so that I have to remove the shame surrounding not being able to do it perfectly. I have to remove that from the equation in order to be able to kind of get back to a base level to be able to start and begin working on the gratitude and the attitude of gratitude, which I hate. I hate that term more than anything, the attitude of gratitude, but there's nothing else that is more impactful in my life than that statement. If I have an attitude of gratitude, the day is going to be better. If I'm pissed off and not grateful for what I have, the day is going to be absolute shit. And that's
without question.
That's
every time.
Just the way it is. I don't know. It's very encouraging to hear you talk about the motivation versus discipline on this 100%.
It's all about discipline.
Yeah.
It's all about discipline and doing it over and over.
How much of your practice do you think is devoted to trying to convince people of the propriety of doing healthy ego-building exercises, endeavors? Like, for example, cold plunge or working out or...
I mean,
are you trying to convince, or are you trying to lead by example?
I try to leave my stuff out of it until it's necessary to say, hey, this is what I do, and it might help you. I absolutely promote as early as possible when working with someone, practice. This paradigmatic thing around practice, like practice is everything. It's not, I'm going to have a good day. No, it's grateful people are happy. I'm going to move my body to create and maintain the motivation. So I've got the attitude and I've got the doing and that stuff comes together. Huh. And I'm motivated. So for a little while, then I have and I have to keep that going. But that doesn't make as much sense to people as introducing all of this to them as practices. Practice. Because everybody's got the little league memory of the coach or the dad or whomever. Like, hey, we got to practice this. We got to get out there in the yard and we got to throw this baseball.
Practice makes perfect. Practice makes perfect.
What's the same for spirituality? It's the same for relationships. Mm-hmm. It's the same for all that stuff. Anything worth anything has to be practiced. And the effect of that is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, discipline has to, I mean, you have the word practice, you have the word discipline, you have the word motivation. These are not the same words, but they live. They sit
in the same
this,
universe.
Yeah, they sit on the same couch together.
Sure.
Yeah, so.
When I first started going to the gym, I was listening to these the guy that does the Daily Stoic podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I love that guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was on that one or if it was just on a related reel. I learned about the benefit of deriving, if you can kind of psych your brain into producing the dopamine as a result of your efforts and not as a result of your goal attainment, then you will be benefited in the long run. Like instead of saying, okay, I'm going to feel good about this when I have a six pack. If you can tell yourself, I'm going to feel good about this.
Because this hard work I'm putting in.
And if I can go to the gym 5 out of 7 mornings, then, you know, okay, I went today. One out of seven, I'm there. 2 out of 7, dopamine. And it really, it just, you have to kind of change your mindset and how you view what is the goal. Is the goal to be Swami on the mountaintop, you know, meditating in boiling oil or in snow and ice naked? Or is it that I'm practicing doing this?
That's awesome. The goal, I don't know that you asked the question, well, what is the goal? But I'm thinking about this. The goal for me is to remember. To remember. Because that part I talked about earlier that I put into the prayer, so I may remember that grateful people are happy. Remember that last week when I did this on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I felt great. So let me remember that works. Do it again. So the prayer, a lot of times throughout the day, is just help me remember whatever it is I'm supposed to remember. Remember what got me here. I'm confused. Okay. Help me remember what I usually do when I'm confused. Well, I come back to the breath. Take a minute and resettle. Get the nervous system back online. There's so many good things to remember. So that's what it is.
That's an excellent point. I can forget things very, very quickly. Very quickly.
So remember that whatever it is. Remember to do the right thing, and remember to do the right thing gently and with kindness, and remember that when I'm defensive, I should probably, that's one of those times I should shut up. That's one of those moments I should shut up. Yeah.
That is a spiritual practice.
Shutting up is a spiritual practice.
Being quiet.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a good one.
Let me tell you something.
So what does this have to do with relationship? I think it does.
We can tie it back.
I think it has to do with what relationship do I have with these things? Because when you messaged me the other day about this, and said we're going to talk about relationships, my weird brain was like, oh, I wasn't thinking about people as much as I was. Like, what relationship do I have with these myriad parts inside me that are all over the place? How do I get them kind of each thing settled down so I can say, oh, yeah, I have a relationship with you and you and this and this and this. That's where.
Yeah, no, I get it. And honestly, one of the main things that I will say to myself probably once a day is, you know, I would be sitting in your office rambling about this, that, or the other. And I would be kind of just getting really, really worked up. And you would say a simple thing to me. You would say, that's information.
That's information.
Yes. That's nothing more than information. And repeating that through my head, as well as the work that I've done with internal family systems and kind of learning how to have that conversation, that relationship with all of my parts has been an absolute game changer in my life. Yes. I certainly still struggle with, you know, a lot of things, but that when I get worked up, and especially when those negative thoughts start pouring in about how I could be better at this, I'm not performing to my maximum potential, and just really being an awful person towards myself, I can employ what, you know, this is information, as well as, hey, one of my parts is activated. I would be served well to go and run to that part and ask how I can ease what that part is going through, and have that conversation and bring everybody to the couch and have that, you know, weekly talk, like, hey, who's activated? How can we help each other? And how can self kind of get back in front of all of this? And you know, a lot of struggles and things have been drastically reduced by just that sentence. This is information. This is just information.
Such a neutral thing, too. It's
disarming. It was disarming for me.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, yes, to remember that it's just information. Because if I'm going to do the right thing with it, it doesn't need to start out at 11. It needs to start out, oh, this is just information. Now let me try to get some more information from this thing.
Yeah, with an attitude of curiosity instead of judgment.
Or demand,
yeah.
Defensiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Because, gosh, that's the one that shows up for me so often, is defensiveness.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that is just...
Yeah. And it's activated by fear. Like, I'm fearful of something, and...
Absolutely. So the relationship that I have with all this stuff inside me, because some of it responds to just like a blanket intervention, but some of it's nuanced. I can't talk to this one thing the same way that I talk to this other thing, because this one thing, I have to be real gentle with this one thing. Like, hey, bud, I really need you to, I hear you, I see you,
I love
this,
you.
Yeah. This other dude's like, you need to sit down and stay out of this. And, you know, learning how to talk to the parts that live just beneath the surface, communicate, talk about communication, how to communicate with all the different things. Because on one day, it might be the empathic, gentle, I see you, I hear you, I love you. And the next day, like I said a moment ago, it's like, hey.
You need to shut up.
Yeah, you need to stay out of the way. And thankfully, after developing and maintaining relationships with those parts, I know how to talk to that guy who lives just under the skin, the guy who used to run the show, the guy who was, you know, the addiction guy. I mean, he's
reactionary.
Yeah, but he also was just trying to protect you and make you feel loved.
And he also, that's the same guy that got us here, right?
Right.
Like, I can't. I had this realization in AA recently where every time I would talk about myself, the version of me, you know, 2008 to 2012 or 13, I would just like, man, that guy sucked. You know, that guy this, that guy that. He was, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I finally realized, like, I'm gonna stop talking about him like that because he got sober. Like, that was the same guy that mm-hmm. got it together. So I need to pay him a little more respect. Yeah. And I think the reason I did that, especially out loud in AA, you know, to see if somebody laughed or that was a good way to try to connect to somebody, like, oh yeah, man, I hate myself too. like no, that's not what I'm trying to promote. I'm trying to promote forgiveness, acceptance, all that kind of stuff. So I'm really trying not to, when I refer to myself or discuss things about me back then, I'm trying not to poo-poo that guy.
Well, we are all very good at being very unkind to ourselves.
Shit. We're the best. We're the absolute best. But it's counterproductive. It's freaking counterproductive. What good is that doing for us? Yeah. How is that serving? How is that hatred, that self-hatred, how is that serving us? And how are we able to use that to serve anyone else?
We don't learn from that.
No. It's a waste, a fundamental waste of time.
Absolutely.
But also so easy to, I mean, it's. I can only speak for myself. That is my default. My default is hate myself. Yep. I'll love you and try to serve you, but I am a piece of shit and I will never be worth anything in the world. I want you to think that I'm wonderful and great, but deep down I hate myself and I'll never achieve anything in my life. Like, that is my default. That is what I work against every day to not listen to, not to not internalize those thoughts that all come right. across.
What are the practices that you recommend to your patients or anybody you're working with to address, how do we turn that negative self-talk into an appreciation of just being information?
Yep. Mm. So go back to the first and foremost thing. Develop a meditation practice. 3 minutes. I don't say sit down for 20 minutes. I say sit down for 2 minutes. Sit down for 3 minutes. Get yourself to where you can sit still, because if you can't sit still, you can't observe. So sit still. Mm. Learn how to sit still. Then learn how to observe what you think about. Try to observe your thoughts as an observer, not as a participant. And then we're getting in touch with detachment. We're getting in touch with letting go. We're getting in touch with acceptance through the practice of sitting still and kind of turning it up a notch by saying, okay, now I'm observing the thoughts. So you sit still, you learn how to observe, and then I try to work with people on, I try to say, learn how to talk to yourself. Not necessarily out loud, but learn how to have some dialogue with these things that come and go, these defensive, unconscious, historical parts that just come up, because that's what we do. That's who we are. That's what we've done. Cultivate a relationship with that. Learn how to talk to that. Talk to yourself. Sit still, observe the thoughts, and talk to yourself. And that usually provides a path towards a singular thing.
This is what I think is, just hearing you lay this out, renews in my mind the importance of having someone to talk to about these things.
Oh yeah.
Like, for example,
very important.
This is kind of borrowing from the relationship broader topic. I went to an AA meeting just a few years ago, and there was a person there, and I thought, awful. I know them, and they're an awful person, and their very existence at this AA meeting is making my life worse. You know, I'm hating hard on this person. So I thought, you know, I left the meeting and I had this, like, you know, ill taste in my mouth. And I thought, yeah, this is not the healthiest way to go to an AA meeting and think about the other participants there, irrespective of what I know about them and their you know, their true self. So I called a friend of mine, Johnny Jerfitz, and I was laying all this out for him, and he was like, yeah, man, I get it. And then he asked one simple question that really changed the entire way I was viewing it. And he said, have you ever thought, I wonder if I'm that person to other people? And I thought, I have not put myself in their shoes. As a matter of fact, I didn't think about that. Mm. And he said, well, you know, are there people who might think some of those same things about you when you show up at the meeting? And of course I didn't think that. I thought, well, everybody's going to be happy I'm there.
Everybody loves me.
Right. And so there really is a vital importance, if you're out there in the recovery world, to have someone in whom you can trust things that are, I mean, I don't want to say bare your soul to, but, you know, those things that are, that make us feel vulnerable, because you can get some advice to look at some of those things. It might not occur to the unbiased observer where they're being unkind to themselves. They might think, oh, well, I'm just, you know, I did steal that thing that time and I'm just a bad person. Instead of saying, hey, look, you know, one poor choice or a collection of poor choices while you're under the influence, a bad person doesn't make. You know, to give them if you don't share with other people some of the things that you think about, you may not be able to borrow a new perspective.
That's right.
And have that knowledge, that wherewithal to change the way that you're thinking. Okay, well, I did do that and I got sober and now I'm able, you know, I can find something positive out of the fact that I stole, I lied, I cheated, I did these things.
And hopefully not repeat the behavior. Yeah.
And you know, you're ability to behave differently out here greatly increases when you're doing similar work on the inside. So if I'm talking to myself and exploring myself and really observing a lot of stuff in here, I'm going to do that out here with people. I'm much more likely to do that out here with people. So as above, so below. You know, that's an old alchemical
I read The Last Symbol not long ago, okay. So I'm all about, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And Brother Johnny's a special guy. He's a good dude.
Oh, I love him.
Oh, yeah. I'd love him dearly. Yeah. Thanks for saying his name.
Throw his name out there.
Yeah.
Shout out.
What's up, Johnny? So, I'm still, there's a little bit of guilt, maybe a tiny bit of shame in my inability to sit still. So for someone who is, you know, sitting still and meditating is perhaps one of the furthest things that they can wrap their head around. What would you say to someone like myself that would encourage them to give it a shot, don't give up? Just like, what is something that I can say to myself that, hey, this is worthwhile, give it 3 minutes, and things will improve,
I mean,
if anything.
I would ask you to tap into the same mindset that you did when you were first going to the gym or first trying to run a mile or first trying to do whatever.
Cold plunge.
Yeah, just, yeah, practice, do it again. Do it. If you can't be still, well, then move your hands. If you can't be, I mean, just do something with that time that you've devoted to the meditation. Because one of the beautiful things about meditation eventually is everything, you know, brushing your teeth can be a meditation.
Yeah.
Taking a sip of water can be a meditation. Walking meditation. I mean, the point is not to leave it on the cushion. The point is to be able to bring it and translate it into all the things that you do. Listening meditation. Talking meditation. I know that may sound absurd, but that's
no,
what
not at all.
Thich Nhat Hanh wrote about that extensively. The point of meditation is to live your life in awareness, to live your life so you can remember, to live your life gently, to live your life so you can begin again at any moment, at every moment. That's the point of it. So do it. It's not supposed to be a success. It's just supposed to be there.
Yeah, I think one thing that I'm really struggling with in life right now is not observing, and I feel as though, I mean, I'm laser focused on building the things that I'm working on now and staying focused and working hard and giving it 110%. But what I think that I'm lacking in, and how I feel like my life could drastically improve, is taking that time to sit still and then observe what's going on within me. I'm not taking the time to observe what's going on within me right now. I'm just raw dogging life, and I'm working hard, and I'm justifying those actions as, well, I'm building something, I'm doing something good for other people, I don't have time for this. But the reality of the situation is I'm not serving myself by not observing how I'm feeling and what's going on.
And I would very gently bring you back to what you said earlier. That's information. That's really good information that you can do whatever you want to do with, because you get to choose.
Right.
You're in control of that.
Right.
If you're sober and you've been sober, you get to choose. To a certain extent.
You're speaking my language now. I'm all about that, because this ties into one of my favorite things. And I really don't think people focus on this enough. Like, the first step, I'm all about it. We're absolutely powerless over drugs and alcohol, and our lives are unmanageable. But there's a whole lot of stuff that we have a lot of power and control over.
There you go.
And, you know, I think that when we focus on first step work, which is vital, I'm not saying it's mandatory, necessary, perfunctory. I mean, compulsory, all those things. But we need to, at the same time, remember that we have a lot of control, especially over what we do, how we react.
Yep. Because my brain just didn't work well at all. So I got that. I was indoctrinated in powerlessness.
Yes.
And I was like, well, shit, okay, don't drink, don't use drugs.
Yeah.
Okay. That's as far as I could go for a long, long time. And I'm glad that I enlarged out of that indoctrination, because, man, I have to be able to control some things. I have to be able to choose. I have to be able to, I can't live in that cave of indoctrination, especially with something as ominous and scary as the word powerlessness.
Well, you can.
I can.
Is an option.
I will not. And that's why I've tried to find as many practices as I possibly could to help me remember, keep me aware, to get dopamine combined with endorphin and serotonin and all these good chemicals that work together to make life beautiful, to make it just on fire with significance. And then the task, because I've set it all up right, remember. And there's a big difference in gently remembering and being indoctrinated and powerless, or being addicted to drugs and alcohol.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's also people that say, well, I don't know, the whole, like, I have power, I think it can be...
That's different.
Yeah, like, yeah. That's not what we're talking about here. Yeah. Like,
big disclaimer.
Yeah.
Big disclaimer.
Yeah, we have power over the things that we do, right? We have the power of our actions. We can't necessarily control our thoughts, but...
But we can choose what to think about.
Right,
we
right.
We can control that part.
We're not saying that we're... all powerful, no, and that we're no, gonna, no, you know, no, that's no, that's not what we're no, saying no. For that Karen we, that's out there.
We are saying that through discipline there is freedom.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
I can choose to go to an AA meeting.
Exactly.
I can choose to make a healthy decision here.
Yeah. Right.
Or healthier decision.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as I spiritually enlarge, I find the things that I can change. And the better I am at changing those things, there is a sense of empowerment.
So instead of it's the healthy ego that you mentioned at the very beginning.
Yeah, ego strength. It's ego strength.
Ego strength.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there becomes a time where, and we've all heard, I won't feel self-esteem until I do esteemable things.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that is, stated another way, is that healthy ego, the idea that I can operate and work to the net good of the people in my sphere.
Yeah, exactly.
That I can help the next man, and that I can look. Every week I learn something on here that I really just kind of take home, and I really am digging the part about, there's more to 12-step work than just helping other people. I can also view it as helping myself.
And all the stuff inside.
I will be a better brother, in recovery brother, if I'm better to myself.
Absolutely.
The as above, so below.
As above, so below.
Look, here's the thing. There's such a thing as healthy selfishness. Like, if we don't take care of ourselves, how can we transmit something? How can we give something away that we don't have ourselves?
Well, we need to
so work. It's important.
We need to work on that self-esteem to realize that we are deserving of healthy boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And it is okay to have rules. I won't be treated this way, or I won't be treated that way, or I won't allow this in my life.
Yeah, and it's okay to be kind to yourself also.
But all too often in the beginning, we're so beat down and we've just allowed this blur between, what we've just allowed things to happen that did not ultimately inure to our benefit, either because of poor self-worth or.
A lot of people don't make it past that part.
Right.
It's sad.
But the reality of the situation is, I mean, we were oftentimes, I was a tornado in active addiction, right?
Yes.
And when I removed the drugs and alcohol from the equation, I was still left with myself, and I was a sober tornado. So for those of us that are in extreme early sobriety or early sobriety in general, like, some days, just not drinking and drugging, that is a freaking win. That is a massive win.
Miracle.
And it is a miracle. It's an absolute miracle. So don't beat up on yourself if you're listening to this right now and you're having a hard time I'm supposed to sit and meditate for 3 to 20 minutes. Like, my wife is divorcing me and taking everything that I have right now. How can I possibly wrap my head around that? For you that's listening right now, good sir or good lady, that's okay. If you stay sober today for the next 24 hours or until you close your eyes tonight, if you stay sober, that's a freaking win. Absolutely. We'll worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be there no matter what, right? So stay sober today. We'll work on tomorrow. We don't have to have this all figured out. And I don't think anyone here in this room right now, and from anything that we've said, is saying that we have to have it all figured out. Mm-mm. Recovery is a journey. It's a long journey. It's going to be a journey for the rest of our lives. So don't allow those negative self thoughts to creep in and start telling you that, oh, I'm not where these guys are because blah, 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 blah. No. We are all just having a conversation. We are all on the exact same journey.
If you'd heard me screaming in the car to my kids on the way from Oxford, Mississippi last week, you'd realize. I mean, I screamed at them 3 separate times.
Progress, not perfection, Drew.
Oh, yeah.
Did you stay sober that day, though?
I did.
That was a win.
That's right.
And if my mother hadn't hidden the belt, I even told my daughter, you're getting a spanking too. Everybody's getting it.
Did you tell Kimberly too?
Well, Kimberly wasn't in the car.
Oh, okay.
It's my older kids. It's like, y'all are, I was not practicing these principles in that affair, I promise you.
All right, Drew, we're about 5 minutes away from the end of the show. Why don't you hop into our favorite part of the show?
I mean, you've been down this road before. I don't know if I had the two questions.
I don't think you did. I was listening to the episode. I don't remember hearing that.
Okay. What do you do poorly in recovery?
Do I do poorly in recovery? Well, when I, encounter something really difficult. So I don't want to out my son. Not that he's going to listen to this, but I'll just say it. My son stopped up the toilet the other night, and I couldn't get it unclogged, and like water started flowing over
the whole thing.
And I was not. Yeah, been there. I mean, I wasn't throwing things, but I was quite agitated. So there are those like big things. See, here's what I do poorly in recovery. The little things get me.
Mm. Sean Guy said the same thing.
Yeah. The little things get the big things, man. I got it.
Yeah.
Most of the time. It's the little trivial, like the dog won't shut up, the kid stopped up the toilet, or something tiny is in the way.
Red Solo cups on the countertop, more than one red Solo cup on the countertop. Yeah. We can't have that.
That sucks. I want to be better with that. And I've told myself that for years, but I still get triggered by it.
Progress.
What do you do well in your recovery?
Okay. Discipline. Doing the same stuff over and over and over. Doing the stuff. The meditation, the exercise, the stuff that I've laid out and have told myself, you have to do this stuff. Staying disciplined around the things that I've told myself I have to do.
Good.
I think I do that. Okay.
Brilliant.
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 Thank you.
Yeah. This has been
this time.
Yeah. This has been phenomenal. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming and giving up an hour. This was a phenomenal, and the clips that are going to come from this, I think, are going to be really, really great. Really
fantastic.
Great. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Zed. Drew, we're not going to be here next week?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. We'll see you.
Hiking trip.
Okay. We'll see you week after next. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today. And
episode 80 in the books.
We'll see you at 81 in a couple weeks.